meow, meow, meow,
meow, meow, meow, meow,
meow,
meow,
meow,
meow, meow, meow,
meow,
meow,
meow,
meow,
freedom fiends. Welcome to LibPair. This is the radio show that exists in libertarian paradise. I'm filling in for regular host Michael Dean, who could not be with us this evening. He's in Somalia teaching kids about podcasting. With me instead is Chandler St. Pierre. Hey, Chandler.
What's up, Derek?
Doing great. The jabbering coon cat. I'm the warrant canary here. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. Counting your blessings?
Always.
Yeah.
Cool night up here in Maine. It's nice. It's
nice and
really, really warm the last 3 days, unseasonably.
Yeah, you know, it just kicked off autumn, fall. The leaves are changing up here in New England, and it looks beautiful. There are even tourists who come to check out how beautiful it is this time of year. It's pretty amazing.
The leafers.
Right, right. And I'm guilty of this. I come from Philadelphia, which is not terribly far away from New Hampshire, where I'm broadcasting now. But I just go for drives. Like I'll just be like, I got like 30 minutes to kill. Why don't I just go for a drive and look at the beautiful leaves? Because you can just drive anywhere around these parts in New Hampshire and just see reds and golds and beautiful green colors like you wouldn't believe.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Fall's always been my favorite season, and technology is such a wonderful thing. I remember when I got my first digital camera, I found that I could get in the car and just drive and just snap hundreds of pictures of trees and leaves and all the
worms,
beautiful scenery in fall, you know.
Was it with trees? One of the coolest things is, like, I don't know, all of their leaves, they make this like fractal effects. It's pretty trippy too. Trees are one of the most beautiful things to look at, especially this time of year. Anyway, I just think it's beautiful because we were riffing about earlier before the show got started, we both met in New Hampshire in the Shire here, as I call it. And that was part of the same time I met Michael Dean, the regular host of this show, at Porkfest, which is the Porcupine Freedom Festival that happens in the White Mountains of New Hampshire every summer. And it's a place where, like, about 1,000 or so liberty-loving people from all over the world come together, mostly from the U.S., and live free. I don't know. Is that what you would call it, Chandler? Am I missing anything? Leaving anything out?
Well, yeah, it's totally LibPair in our time, and a lot of times it's just a big old party. I mean, that's what it was for me.
Yeah, that's what it was for me the whole time as well. And but that's what I want my life to be, right? So that's why I moved to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, an idea of moving 20,000 liberty loving people to the same geographic location. And that's been LibPair for me. Like, this radio show is ideally a libertarian paradise, the show that would exist there once we live beyond a state controlling things and making decisions on our behalf without our consent.
But I always thought the idea of the Free State Project was neat, but I had kind of a different approach on it.
Yeah.
I think you should decentralize and spread out liberty-loving folks.
Yeah.
Get them all over the place to plant that seed.
I like it. I dig it. I mean, I get where you're coming from. It's sort of like the opposite idea of the Free State Project, right? Which is centralizing a community in one place. But there's just as much merit to decentralizing it, right? Because, you know, every person could then plant their seed where they are and help freedom grow everywhere around the planet. There are merits to both ways. Was that what you would say you're doing? Planting those seeds where you are?
Yeah, I try. You know, you talk to people in your communities, your neighborhoods. I mean, I do a lot of, I guess, if you want to call it activism or whatever, online. But you do it every day, just encountering people.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, the general conversations that people have. You know, I had one on Facebook, and this is like a digital space, where, of course, that unites us even more than geography. But it was a discussion about football and these two football players who had worn like really effeminate clothing for their like press conferences. And this spurred a huge discussion on Twitter, which, okay, so they were looking really effeminate. It made people kind of upset. The NFL Network poked a little fun at them on Twitter, saying, who wore it better, right? And these are both, like, you know, men, and they look like they're wearing women's clothing, basically. And this is in a public press conference. But it brought up all kinds of questions about, like, well, who should decide? Of course, it's not a government decision, but should someone like me, who thinks that they look great, have any say in this at all? Whereas a football fan should have all the say in what their heroes are wearing on screen, right? Like, shouldn't they have the power, or should Budweiser or the advertisers have the power over what people wear? I don't know. It's just sort of the questions I would want in a free society. Like, who's really in control here?
Well, I should think that the market should drive it, and it's all up to individual taste. You know, if they're down with that sort of thing, let them go with it, and if the market approves, they'll know.
That's what I'm talking about. The market solves these problems, because, like, that's what fashion's always been, right? The market, people deciding what sort of length clothing they want to wear or what colors they want to wear. And this brought up even more interesting discussion about the market, because, you know, fashion has gone in cycles. Like, whereas men are calling these football players who are wearing tight pants effeminate, you know, the tight pants of Shakespearean days used to be really in and masculine. That was the thing to wear. So it's just weird to me how cycles of fashion change, and they're all driven by the market, what people are interested in. The only wrong thing to do is wear the same thing as yesterday. There's always got to be some sort of change.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. So, hey, there was this awesome card game that Jim Jesus, a friend of Michael Dean, came up with, Lulbertarians Against Humanity. I think it's hilarious. What do you say we do a couple of calls and responses from this game?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, I got some calls for you. You do responses?
Yes.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, in the long run, we're all blank.
Anti-statists advocating mandatory GMO labeling.
That's pretty good. All right, that's a good warm-up. I was reading excerpts from the old Ron Paul newsletter. I can't believe he said blank are blank.
The amazing atheist banana and drones.
All right. And finally, true libertarians always blank.
Rolling blunts on a copy of The Socialist Worker.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. Very exciting. Well, you know, there are a couple of news stories I wanted to get to in this episode. Some status stuff. I always avoid tyranny talk when possible, but there's this one that came up on my newsfeed that just I have to address. Water allocation in California. I don't know if you've read about this.
Yes. This is an ongoing problem.
Big deal. it cracks me up. It's a shame. It shouldn't. It's not funny when there's a shortage of serious, you know, natural elements like water. But it's just ridiculous to me that we live on a planet that's filled with water and that there's a problem people getting it in a place that's on a border with water. It makes no sense at all. And it has to be the government. I don't know where or why, but I think the government's in charge of providing people with water. And so I blame them.
Well, I would tend to agree with that because, you know, you have your city and district organizations that control the water, you know, the water companies. And it doesn't really operate according to market demand. So that creates the problem of shortages and ultimately rations.
Yeah, market demand. What would be like the market demand for water? I guess it would be pretty high out in California. I wonder if it would, if the people out in California would have even have moved there if they weren't guaranteed things like water. You know, well, if water companies had built up in a free market, they probably wouldn't go to places that are like deserts.
Yeah, unless that's what you're looking for. You know, I mean, people that are really concerned with having nice green lawns and flowers and plants out in the yard are probably not going to choose that area. Or if they do, they'll be willing to pay a higher price to have the water necessary to maintain that sort of lifestyle.
Are you one of those people who farms a lawn?
No, no. If you look at my lawn, you see that I'm not very good at maintaining that.
Cool. Well, I am anti-lawn. I think lawns are for squares. And I grow a garden. I tore up the lawn where I live, and I put in a garden, a raised bed. I grow bok choy and all sorts of herbs and vegetables. I picked a radish from there today. It was delicious. And gardens are nice. Do you garden?
Yeah, I do. I haven't gardened since I bought this new place a couple of years ago. It's on my to-do list. I want to do some raised beds, and I actually want to get into aquaponics as well.
Yeah,
when I went
up
to see Derek Slopey, he's our Freedom Fiends programmer, he had a little aquaponics rig going, and it was really amazing to see how that works.
What is aquaponics?
Basically, you have a kind of almost like a raised bed garden. There's a few different ways to do it, and you have it feeding into a fish tank, and the fish fertilize the soil, and the soil...
How do you have it feeding into, like, with, like, tubes of PVC, water or something?
Yeah, you connect the garden bed to the fish tank with PVC pipes and a small pump.
Isn't that, like, I mean, don't you have to protect it or something? You can't just have that outside.
Well... Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends.
That seems complicated. I don't know.
It's really not. Like, I got a video and a booklet on how to start aquaponics, and you can do it for under $200, like a complete setup.
Okay, and so it's cheap, but it sounds hard.
Well, it's really not, because once you set it up, it's almost self-sustaining. I mean, I'm not going to say there's no work. Like, a lot of people will get out there and say, yeah, it's all completely self-sustaining and there's no work.
Yeah.
That's not quite true.
It's a free energy machine.
Yeah, it is very minimal work, and it is self-sustaining. You know, the fish feed the soil feed the fish. It goes back and forth in cycles.
Worms. Why is California even part of this country?
Yeah, no kidding.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Freedom Fiends. Should your water be distributed by the government? Daily water allocation limits set by the California government and the bureaucrats.
Oh, come on. They know best.
Yes, the faceless bureaucrats know what's best for you. You probably know your social security number, your driver's license number, and perhaps the latest wrinkle in mattress marketing, your sleep number. But do you know your drought number? It's the first line from this article from the...
Yes, it's 102.
Really? The San Gabriel Valley Tribune is writing about drought number. I didn't even know such a thing existed. Are you serious? Do you know your drought number, Chandler?
We don't have any drought numbers up here in Maine.
I don't even know it was a thing. Well, it apparently represents the amount of water you are allowed to use per day. And if you don't know it, you probably should. What a square, a hardcore status writing this article. Not knowing could cost you money as California's severe drought moves. Maybe just being straight up. As California's severe drought moves into a fourth year, state and local water agencies are working on something called allocation-based rate structures, a kind of precursor to water rationing that's all the rage in Sacramento.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah. Allocation-based rate structures. Here's how it works. Your local water company, special district, or city assigns you and your household a number in gallons, a daily water allocation. So it's exactly what it sounds like. It's
but
not like,
I want to know, how do they determine what your allocation is. Is it just random?
No, don't they
arbitrary?
Don't they have measurements for that? They have that on like the side of your house, like the meters. The meter reads your energy, and doesn't it read your water too? I mean, I have no idea. Yeah,
if you're on city water, you'll have a water meter that will, and that's how they bill you for water and sewer.
And your water company knows. They know how much you use. They bill you for it.
Right. So even if they know how much you use, though, how do they determine what your allocation is? What if you're a big household and you have lots of teenage kids that like to take showers? You know, they're just going to say, well, sorry, it doesn't work that way.
Leave them dirty. Or what if you have a neighbor who comes over and flushes your toilet a bunch of times just to spite you?
Yeah.
I mean, you could get some sort of fine. I don't know what the penalty will really be. Quote, we want you to stay within that budget. That way we know you're using water in an efficient way. Wow. The Irvine Ranch Water District. I guess they're unhappy about this. I would be, too. If someone came and told me, oh, look, here's the fine of $500 per violation. Wow. So you never know. Like, I guess at the end of the month, maybe you get slapped with a couple of violations.
Now you got to kind of wonder, is this to conserve and allocate the best use of water, or is this just another revenue generating scheme for the state?
Well, I don't know it seems like they're trying to pull the levers of human behavior and make people act a certain way to conform to what they want. You know, they're saying, well, we don't have enough water to go around, so we have to ration it out to people. It can't be a solution of what, so we'll get more water. Like, if it were a regular company, if it were, you know, Taco Bell, and they were like, well, we don't have enough tacos for everyone, so, you know, everyone gets one. You can't order as many as you like. It's like, no, you just, you get the supplies for more tacos. Are we short of water on Earth? Last I checked, we've got plenty. Isn't there some way to convert this water into drinkable water?
I don't know the exact process, but I know that desalinization plants can do that. And, I mean, even if it's not drinking water, it could be used for, you know, showers and flushing the toilets and washing dishes and all that sort of thing. But again, I come back to the market, and the market is not driving the demand. It's completely arbitrary. If the market was driving the demand, I think you'd see an increase in technologies to utilize the ocean water that's right on their borders and pipe it into the homes and businesses out there.
Yeah, man, it's totally backwards. Listen to how backwards it is. This is a quote. Rates send a powerful signal. It's one thing to ask for voluntary action, but that can only go so far. Rates should be designed to send a financial signal to customers. Ouch. Yeah, right? So they're trying to let them know, wow, to enable them to know their water use and compare that with their neighbors. This is like...
Sounds like a form of control to me, man.
Yeah, I don't like where that's coming from. Maybe California can just be the next Catalonia, Scotland, and declare independence, break free, do its own thing. Sorry, California.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Beans with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. Meow, 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 meow. Meow.
Meow.
Warren Canary here. I have not been contacted by the federal government.
Me neither.
Cat? No?
I wouldn't listen to him even if I did.
All right, good. Well, here we are. This is Freedom Fiends. And we're talking about the drought in California. It's sad when there's a shortage of natural resources like water. But there's a solution. As always, there's a market solution. What's the market solution that you discovered, Chandler?
There's a... what did they call it? A drought-shaming app. that targets California water wasters. And
I
basically,
like that.
You know, it's on your iOS or Android, and people are snapping pictures and I guess giving locations of people that waste water.
So, like, what's an example? The guy on the side of the road spraying
his sidewalk
and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you see like big puddles of water on the pavement, and yet you know, you got people's lawns drying up and not enough water to grow crops and stuff. So there's a screenshot. I guess the app is called the company is called ViSafe. But I think that's pretty creative. You know, it's non-violent, non-coercive. And we, as libertarians, we've often talked about the usefulness of shaming people. They can still make the choice as to how they behave, but we don't have to choose to associate with them. So this is a little bit more cooperative and voluntary than setting arbitrary rates and taxing you.
Yeah, that's a little better. I guess there are all degrees of things, though, because in California, I'd be afraid to take someone's picture of them, like, wasting water, because they've got water cops that patrol California's streets. Do you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, this was news to me, too, but apparently NBC reported in July of this year that, yep, introducing water cops. They, they can knock on your door, according to some complaints, and I guess their goal is to help make homeowners
compliant.
A little more frightened. Yeah, I don't know. You know, they're looking out for you. The people in the government, they know what's best with the water. That's why there's a, I don't know, it's weird. Like, the government and sun gods of ancient civilizations have so much in common.
Yeah, and I'm willing to bet that those government buildings have no shortage of water. I'm sure they have fountains and all sorts of lovely things, and I'm sure they never waste water in those buildings, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess the bureaucrats always give themselves the cushiony seats, but and they probably have plenty of water in their water coolers. But I meant that, you know, sun god remark in that they can be the providers when things go right, and somehow it's also, it's just like up to fate or some other god when things go wrong. Like, okay, so people's water works fine. They turn the tap and they can use plenty of it. And they say, oh, thank government. You know, they're the ones who provide the water. And then you don't have any water. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, it's a drought. That's just the way things go. We can't blame the people in charge. It's weird to me that they get some sort of pass. Like, why aren't the headlines saying, like, government not providing enough water? Like, I don't know why they don't get any attention on this.
Well, issue. I think that goes into something else we want to talk about later, too, and it's the role of the media. The media has often been called the fourth estate. And in this day and age, the mainstream or lamestream media.
What age is this? I want to know. When people say this day and age, I never know what.
The digital age, I guess. I don't know.
The digital age. That sounds pretty cool. I'll go for that.
Well, the role of the media has always been to reinforce the ruling structure, you know, whatever government that would be.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you don't see a lot of, you know, those headlines like government responsible for water shortages.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's face it, the FCC will grant their radio and television licenses. So if you have a media outlet that's consistently bashing the existing power structure, they're probably not going to get the necessary permission slips to keep doing that. But one of the beautiful things about this age is you have podcasts like this and you have alternative websites on the internet that can get that truth out.
Yeah, hey,
so
you're a podcaster. You're alternative media. People can get the truth from you.
Yeah, I never even thought of that. But yeah, I guess that's true, you know? And there's much more choice out there as to what you can consume and how you can consume it now, which is, I think, the biggest saving grace. You know, a lot of people say that the internet was started by the government and it was used as a means to distract and control people. Without going all conspiracy theory, even if that was true, the genie's out of the bottle now.
What do you mean by that? People can use it however they want?
Yeah. I mean, we aren't yet to a point where everything is totally censored 1984 style. And I don't think even if the ruling structures wanted to do that, that they could fully implement that. I mean, there's so many alternatives out there. You know, when you just think about mesh networking and Wi-Fi and all that stuff, there's so many ways to keep that going and get that information out now. So the genie is out of the bottle.
Yeah. Technology wants to be free. Humanity needs to be free. Too many people are working on freedom projects around the world, especially projects that involve technology, that that genie is well out of the bottle. Things like what was it, Dark Wallet? I have one of my show prep stories mentions that the military just sat down with some members of the Bitcoin industry, and they were concerned about ISIS acquiring capital through funding in Bitcoin. I mean, totally decentralized currency could be donated anonymously from anywhere around the world. That's a level of freedom that the average person never had in the history of the world. No. It's pretty remarkable. Even though some speculate the internet was designed to control, it's really doing the opposite. It's allowing people to be free.
Yeah, it's really making the world a much smaller place and decentralizing thoughts and ideas. You know, I remember talking to a friend once, and we were talking about Anonymous, and this was when I didn't quite understand exactly what Anonymous was.
And what would you say they are now that you do understand?
Well, the best explanation she gave me is that Anonymous is a collective of individuals acting in concert and independently to common goals and to their own, you know, pet projects. It's so many things that we can't really classify it. You know, I mean, when you see Anonymous, you think the guy Fox masks and a bunch, you know, this secret group of hackers that is wreaking havoc on whoever is upsetting them at the time.
It just seems to be a convenient mask for hackers to wear if they want to do damage to some government or corporation, and they want to appear larger than they are.
Yeah, it is. And I think the point she was trying to get across, and it's a point that a lot of people still don't understand, is it's not centralized. There's no central authority. There's no star chamber and group of people that dictate what they will do and that sort of thing.
Wait a minute. Don't they have an official Twitter or like official websites and stuff?
There's a group that claims the mantle of Anonymous that has an official Twitter, but but this is the point I'm trying to make. You know, that's one aspect of Anonymous. You could say that, I mean, I don't obviously have the computer programming skills. I wish I did, but, you know, you could say that this is another aspect. There's so many different aspects. The whole point is it's decentralized and leaderless and unstructured. Some of the people that believe in that philosophy and ideology do really good things. Some of them do less than good things. But the power structures of the governments of the world can't just go after one group or one person and shut it down. And that's kind of what the internet itself is. And that's why I think you're seeing a decrease in the relevancy and legitimacy of the mainstream media.
Yeah, I would agree. And people have alternatives. There's so many options for them to turn to. Well, what do you think should be the role of the media? If the mainstream media is failing, you know, what should real independent media look like?
it should look like whatever people ask for. Again,
is it the anchor with the scrolling bar across the screen giving you the Dow and the SP whatever?
To me personally, this is what the media should be. What we're doing right now. To, I don't know, somebody my dad's age, maybe it's Tom Brokaw or whoever on the nightly news.
Right.
It's whatever the market dictates. I mean,
yeah, so there should be more variety, it sounds like. You know, that actually, it sounds ridiculous to say this out loud, but that hadn't really occurred to me. Like, there's one format for media, for the news. You just fit that mold. Like, I worked on a local news broadcast here in Keene, New Hampshire years ago, where we would put on the local news, what was going on in the world of activism. Here it was called Free Keene TV. People could look up, the old episodes are still online. But the idea is that it had to fit the mold of what regular news looked like to regular folks, or they weren't going to see it as news. You know, there'd be some other show. Like, it needs to be recognizable in that format with the opening and the anchor and the broadcast bottom third title and stuff. If it doesn't fit that format, it just isn't news somehow. I don't know.
Well, I do know what you're saying. That sounds to me like a kind of a preconceived, discriminatory type of attitude, but it's unfortunately what people look for when they are looking for the news.
We could have been wrong. We were just guessing that people wanted to see something familiar.
Yeah, I guess I come back to market demand, you know, and if it's local stuff you want to know, I just want whatever the news is, the media, to not be beholden to anyone.
Except the customers.
Exactly, and I think that's what the major media is lacking right now.
Let's go to the market. Let's do it now.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Not Your Grandpa's Talk Radio. This is Freedom Fiends with Chandler St. Pierre and Derek J. Michael Dean is sailing across the universe on a rainbow of podcast dust.
I thought he was in Somalia, man.
You know, he moves quick.
He does.
So we're talking about lots of stuff. The media, the military having a meeting with members of the Bitcoin Illuminati.
Ha!
Yeah, the big wigs of the Bitcoin industry. This is kind of weird. I saw this, it made me go, it's under headlines of things that make me go, U.S. military command holds informational meeting with Bitcoin industry. And then, just to quickly summarize, the bottom line is, here's the quote. The military has an interest in knowing everything it can about how the world works, and Bitcoin is a big part of how the world is going to work. That's pretty cool.
That's quite an acknowledgement coming from the government.
Yeah, I'd say so. That's a big deal. And so who put this on? It's apparently a group of people who call themselves Bens, and they've got it's B-E-N-S. The plural of the name, and they are like, I don't know, they want to be like Bitcoin Illuminati or something, or no, they're the business executives for national security. Isn't that a weird title? It's a nonprofit organization of American business leaders. It includes Jeff Bezos of Amazon and the former AIG CEO Hank Greenberg and Cook of Cook Industries. So it's like serious bigwigs were at this meeting talking about Bitcoin. Kind of a big deal. I'm excited about it. The Bitcoin Foundation Global Policy Council Jim Harper attended the meeting and said his message to the government was that, quote, Bitcoin runs on a transparent ledger system and that the industry is much more than a, quote, magic cloak for evil behavior. You think that's what the military thinks this is?
The governments of the world in general, I think that's what they think Bitcoin is. It's a threat to their power structure. You know, it's a threat to the corporatist fascist system we have with the Federal Reserve. And it scares them. So they're going to throw out that image to the media of how Bitcoin can be used to fund terrorists and all sorts of horrible, nasty people that want to do harm to you.
Listen to this one quote from Jim Harper. He's from the Bitcoin Foundation. He says, "The Bitcoin community doesn't necessarily endorse U.S. foreign policy. And the Bitcoin community doesn't necessarily endorse everything the U.S. intelligence community does."
You think?
You would think there's going to be some follow-up. Like, but we'll get along. But we'll cooperate. It's like, no, we just don't endorse it. That's it. That's the quote from Jim Harper of the Bitcoin community. Yeah, we don't really endorse your foreign policy or anything your intelligence community does. Okay, ISIS concerns. Here's the important part. The meeting comes at a time when there's been much discussion about whether Bitcoin and digital currency could be used to help radical and extremist organizations gain access to financial services. Well, yeah. Yeah, kind of can. Like, gold gives people that sort of access, too.
I've got a question for these cats, okay?
Yeah.
For years and years and years, we were told and led to believe that Al-Qaeda and all these terrorist groups were just a bunch of backwards Islamic fundamentalists in caves, you know, that couldn't pull off, you know, anything meaningful.
That was before billions of dollars of U.S. funding.
Exactly.
Now yeah. They're pretty advanced.
Yeah. So, you know, which is it? Are they these backwards folks that just want to impose Sharia law on us? Or are they these tech-savvy people that can raise money for their exploits through Bitcoin?
I don't know. They seem pretty tech-savvy to me. From some of these videos that are coming out of these beheadings, they've got some real serious special effects, too.
Yeah, the studio's right out of Langley, Virginia.
I knew something looked familiar about that backdrop. Hey, when we come back, let's talk more about Bitcoin and the military. And what do you say we get into some drugs, huh? I mean, the war on drugs, that is.
Yes.
This is Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Not your grandpa's talk radio. Hang in there, Chandler. We'll get you some water. We'll get some to California, too.
We don't need no stinking water.
We don't need no badges. We need freedom, cats, and bacon.
Yeah, I can go for some bacon.
Worms. Worms, worms. Meow, meow, meow. Meow! Meow therapy. Meow, 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 meow. Worms, worms, worms. Welcome back to Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty. Yeah, we're here in libertarian paradise, chatting. The we is me, Derek J, and Chandler St. Pierre.
Yo.
Yo, yo. And talking about war, media, drugs.
War were declared.
Speaking of Bitcoin and drugs, Silk Road gets a lot of attention on this show and others. News articles. Anytime Bitcoin gets brought up, they want to bring up the illicit substances that are purchased with this digital currency. On a website known as the Silk Road. It was shut down by the FBI, and its alleged admins were apprehended by the federal agents. And about a month later, the website was back up.
Of course.
So, nothing was really solved, but there are these two people who are now looking at life in prison for operating this website, allegedly. One of them you may know. He goes by Dread Pirate Roberts and was the alleged admin of the site known as Ross Ulbricht is his real name. And you can learn more about Ross at freeross.org. He's getting a lot of attention. Anytime the Silk Road and the big Bitcoin bust is brought up, he's the one who gets the mention. But you know who isn't mentioned, Chandler, is Andrew Jones. And he was also arrested for being allegedly an admin of the Silk Road, was slapped with the same charges as Ross Ulbricht, and is facing life in prison for operating a website. But he is not in prison. His parents put up $1 million bail just so that he could be out and free living in his parents' house. He's not totally free, though. He can't use any internet-capable device. So you can support... He goes by Drew. You can support Drew at drewsdefense.org. drewsdefense.org is the website. You can send Bitcoin. I think they also take PayPal. But I would recommend Bitcoin. That's the currency of free people. And they need all the help they can get. Like I said, they're just a regular family. Their parents put up $1 million bail by putting their retirement and their house on the line. So help them out, drewsdefense.org. Just a quick plug, because Chandler, I'm actually organizing a party for Drew later on this year. There's actually, it's only a month away. My goodness. Something called Keenvention. Do you know of it?
I've read a little bit of it, yeah.
And
it sounds like a good time.
Yes, Keenvention is a very good time. This will be the second annual, and it's a convention that happens in a hotel. Like, you've seen these before. There are conventions all over the place, and this one, like others that you've probably seen, happens in a hotel, and there are speakers with different panels on different topics. Keenvention is New Hampshire-centric, though. It focuses on activism. And we're going to be kicking it off with a Halloween party. I thought it would be important to have fun. Like, if people are coming from all over the country, perhaps the world, to visit Keen to see what it's like, I want to show them a good time. And I want to have a good time myself. So thought it was important to plan this party. And all of the proceeds of the party are going to benefit Drew of Drew's Defense, to help him get some media attention to his case, because he's just not brought up when this case is mentioned, and he is facing the same exact charges as Dread Pirate Roberts of Silk Road. So please check it out and give your support to Drew's Defense and Ross, freeross.org. Have you been following their stories, Chandler?
Just a little bit from what I've heard on LRN and, you know, the various podcasts. It's sad to me that somebody who allegedly was providing such a cool service that the market demanded gets shut down.
And still demands. In fact, I think there are now two Silk Roads, at least.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, I remember when a lot of the big BitTorrent sites came out, there was one, what was it called? Like Supernova or something. And then Demonoid later on. The government shut down those sites. And I swear to God, within 24 hours of them getting shut down, two more, even bigger ones popped up.
Yep, so that's exactly the way it goes. They're like a hydra.
Yeah, but it is very sad to me, you know, that even the services got shut down. And these folks that were allegedly just trying to provide a service and do something good are facing life in prison. You know, their lives could be over. They might not know what freedom is for the rest of their life. And it just saddens me that we live in a world where bureaucrats can arbitrarily deprive you of that liberty and that freedom.
Well, maybe I'm naive, Chandler, but I hold out hope. I have hope for Ross Ulbricht and Andrew Jones that they will one day be free. That they will hopefully next year attend Porkfest.
That would be excellent. Well, I know there was a big push at Porkfest to raise money and educate yourself on the whole situation of what happened.
Yeah,
and before, I mean, this Porkfest, affects all of us. I had never heard of it.
Really? Wow. Yeah. I think this is a story that affects all of us. What happens with Bitcoin and the Silk Road determines where the future of internet freedom goes. I mean, can a person be imprisoned for life for operating a website. I mean, say what you will about what was done on the website, but ownership of it? I mean, that's, I don't know. I guess they're attributing it to, like, if you owned a shop and people came in and did illegal drug deals, you would then be responsible for that. But shouldn't you be going after the people who do the real crimes? And then again, drugs, selling drugs, you know, in a voluntary exchange across long distances, I mean, that's no crime either. So,
well, it's not. And it's my understanding, too, that, you know, when we talk about the Silk Road and various websites and services like that, we always hear about how people sell drugs and guns, but it's my understanding that there were a lot of goods and services on those websites that weren't necessarily illegal, for better or for worse, however you want to look at it. But it seems to be the focus, again, especially when you're talking about the media, is it's all about drugs and guns and all the evils of the world, you know, and that's what's on this website.
Well, I see these people as heroes. You know, if they, Andrew Jones and Ross Ulbricht, if they are guilty, if they are the people responsible for operating the website, then they are heroes for making the black market a safer place.
Yes.
And
I would agree with that.
If they are not, then Ross Ulbricht and Andrew Jones are being wrongfully imprisoned by an overreaching government. So, you know,
surprise,
they need your support. They need your support, and it does affect all of us. You know, it's like you said, it's sad. I think it's a little too early to say. It could be a happy victory for freedom if this gets enough attention and people say, okay, we've had enough. We need to have internet freedom. We need to have end the drug war. But I guess that depends a lot on how the media reports on the drug war.
Yeah, if the media follows the pattern that we would expect them to follow, the one that they've followed for the last 60 years, they're not going to focus that attention. So I think it falls to us to increase people's awareness. I'm sure 95 maybe percent of the people that I deal with on a daily basis probably have no idea what Silk Road is and have never heard of these guys. So I think it falls upon me to kind of brief them on it and say, look, this is what this means. You know, it's not just about this website that got closed down because they were offering drugs. It's about freedom, you know, the freedom to transact in the goods and services and currencies that you choose instead of what we're being told is acceptable.
Tell them it would be like eBay getting shut down in 1997.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I never even thought of that.
It would be like the government saying, holy, people are having yard sales and they're not even getting permits and they're doing it on the internet. We have to stop this.
Yeah. Well, and it comes down to, like so many things, it comes down to control. And the more control that the government can exert, the better they feel. And when they start to lose that control, that's when you see the tyranny increase. I read an article on backwoodshome.com. I think it was Jim Duffy that wrote it, and it was advice to his kids, and it was a three-part expose, and in one of them, he talked about the underground economy and how as the systems that we've taken for granted start to collapse more and more, as the tyranny starts to increase, the economic tyranny and the civil liberties tyranny starts to increase, it's going to be more important for not only us nowadays, but our children. Like, I have a 15-year-old daughter. It's going to be more important for them to understand how the underground economy works and to embrace that.
Yeah, more than in the past, you think? I mean, the underground economy has always been with us. Why is it more important now?
Well, I think it's more important now because, you know, we talk about the tyranny that's out there, and the history of governments and the ruling structures has always been one of tyranny upon the masses.
Boo.
But
bumming me out, man. Too much tyranny.
But in the past, I think it was much easier to subvert that because they didn't have all the control mechanisms in place that they have now. You know, we talk about how technology is a saving grace, and it is. It enables us to do so many wonderful things, but we have to remember that the adversaries have access to that technology too. And granted, they tend to be a little behind the times. They're always trying to play catch up.
Yeah.
But
they're having this military meeting. What is Bitcoin?
But they have those resources, so it does increase their ability to regulate and control. So the more we could subvert that in a non-violent, voluntary way, the better off we'll be at advancing the ideals of liberty and freedom.
That sounds complicated, but I think it's just as easy as, like, you know, broadcasting your own media, making a website or a podcast or a blog site, or using a black market service, even,
or not asking for permission slips for the government to do activities that aren't illegal.
This is not legal advice. I want to be clear.
This is philosophical advice.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Worms, worms. Meow?
Meow.
Meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow. Meow,
meow. Meow.
Just
real. All right, worms.
I gotta say, Derek, I'm a little sad. I was reading the news and I came across a piece, and this is not sarcastic. I am a little bummed out. One of my favorite statists, Jim Trafficant, just passed away this month.
Oh, why is he one of your favorite statists?
Have you ever watched his speeches on the House of the Floor?
No.
Or the floor.
The House of the Floor.
When you get some spare time, just Google him. He used to rant and rave. He was a Democrat, and he actually got...
Oh, he's like a politician type. He was in the House.
Yeah, he was in the House or the Senate. I don't remember which one.
That terminology is square.
Yeah, he used to rant and rave. He was a really big opponent of the Federal Reserve.
He was really
very critical of Israel's...
Didn't they just have a leak problem? Didn't the Fed just have some audio come out where it was like, hey, do everything bad and give the banks a bunch of money?
Probably. I mean, it was bound to happen.
It did just happen.
Yeah.
I was not even interested. I heard the article. I heard like a blip about like, oh, Federal Reserve leaked tapes. Like, Fed chair says, you know, give everyone free money. And was just so bored by so predictable.
Yeah, it was.
Gonna click.
But yeah, this cat was pretty funny. I mean, for a statist, you know, his favorite catchphrase was "Beam me up, Scotty." You know, he'd talk about something ridiculous the government was doing. And
why would he say that?
I don't know. It's just one of his things. He used to have a big old toupee, and he'd get on the floor and start ranting and raving. He actually got put in prison for like a few years. He says that the government set him up, and he was supposedly accepting gifts from contributors or some foolishness or whatever.
People who say the government set them up, I don't know. I have a hard time with that. Like,
well, you know, I don't want to go into it too much, but right. I did look at his case, and I got to say he makes a good argument.
All
but
right.
The thing was is they told him if he stopped bringing up certain topics about certain foreign countries and their influence. He could get out in a year, and he was like, "Nope, I ain't doing it." And he ended up serving his full term.
Wow!
So in prison, but anyway, he passed away, and it's always sad, you know. I mean, he had some entertainment value and stuff. So yeah,
don't want none, don't start none.
You know, even though the status out there, you know, I don't wish them any ill. I just wish they'd go away. And he went away and kind of did his own thing. And it's always sad when somebody passes away. Did you see that I guess Eric Holder is resigning, and did you see where he's going?
No, once he gets I'm not even paying attention. The federal government, I don't even pay any attention to them. Who is Eric Holder, and what is he doing?
He's the attorney general, the one that got all the flack for...
Attorney general.
Does he wear a Captain Crunch outfit or something that looks like a general uniform?
He's not that stylish, man. Come on.
I wish they would wear, like, the Michael Jackson... moonwalk glitterazzi sort of like
the jacket and the gloves
something general-esque. If you're gonna be the attorney general or the surgeon general, shouldn't you have like an eye patch and a
peg leg? One of the reasons Gaddafi was so entertaining in his early years, he had that little general suit.
Yeah, he looked like it. He looked the part. That's what the American politicians lack. I think, you know, the Chavez's and the Stalins of the world, they had it right with the military garb, right? They looked handsome and like leaders. But these politicians, they just wear the same old suit, boring, no flair. So tell me, sorry, I was distracted. I'm thinking about their outfits. What's Attorney General doing?
So he's resigning, and, you know, because he's gotten a lot of flack for the, what was the gun running?
Fast
and Furious, yeah.
What does that mean? He gave guns to Mexican gangs, and then they used them to kill people?
Yeah, supposedly.
Yeah. But, who could have predicted?
Anyway, long story short, he's going to work for, it's either AIG or Goldman Sachs.
Oh!
Surprise, surprise. Isn't that funny how they all, like...
I think it was AIG. I did see that headline. That was surprising.
Yeah, I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline. I was like, I'm not even surprised. It's a revolving door. You know, these cats, they get into politics, and then they go into big business, and they go back to politics, back to business, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's like people think you're joking when you say that's fascist. Like, you're just throwing out some bad word, trying to call someone a square or a nerd. Fascist is a real term.
It is.
People go from politics to big business, that's fascist.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
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 Meow. Worms, worms, worms. This is Freedom Fiends. So, Chandler here, we're talking about the role of the media and the war on drugs and Silk Road. I'm throwing a party. Hey, you know, speaking of the party that I'm throwing, people can learn about that at keenvention.info. That's keenvention.info. And it's going to be Halloween-themed costume party, and I'm going to have fog machines and lasers. You know,
sounds awesome, man.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. You know, one of the problems, though, with having fog machines is you often trip the smoke alarms. And I want to plan ahead for this. So I'm in the unfortunate position of being an anarchist who has to request a favor from the state.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough, man.
I hate it. And I basically need a fire marshal or some guy with a key to stand near the fire alarms and sit there, and if they go off, just bloop, turn it off. But I need to, like, pay him and, like, go out and hire and ask permission, and it's, like, icky. And I don't want
to. Makes your skin crawl, huh?
Yeah. So I've put it out into the universe that hopefully I'll find someone who's really friendly and down and cool and will dig my dance party, and you know, that they'll be super affordable, and maybe they'll accept payment in like pizza and soda or something.
That would be cool.
That would be the ideal. That's what I'm aiming for. So there you go, universe. Make it happen. What else? Tell me why police are dumb.
Yeah. Well, I thought we were talking about the media, but let me pull that one up.
Oh, yeah. Do you have more to say on the media?
No, I mean, I think we covered it.
It's, we are the media. That's our answer.
Yeah.
You know, if the media is the problem, just become the media and then fix it.
Yeah. So I was reading an article earlier, and it's entitled U.S. Court Says It's Okay for Police Departments to Refuse to Hire Someone Who Is Too Smart. Now, I mean, the title of that article sounds a bit absurd, but it's actually quite true. The subheading is, ever wonder why cops yell, quit resisting as they beat a person who's not resisting, or they shoot people who pose no threat? Maybe the answer is right in front of us. And I'm reading this article. It's on thefreethoughtproject.com.
They do great work.
Yeah, they do. I just recently came across them, and I don't know how I've missed them for so long. So anyway, the article starts, the Wunderlich Cognitive Ability Test is a popular group intelligence test used to assess the aptitude of prospective employees for learning and problem solving in a range of occupations. Throughout both the U.S. and Canada, many police forces require candidates to take this test as one of the qualifications prior to being hired.
Okay, so this is like the exam they have to take before they can become a cop?
It's one of many.
Okay. I want to point out that the image, the featured image of this article at thefreethoughtproject.com features a row of police officers in riot gear holding their police shields, and one of them has their police shield upside down. It's like frowning. Yeah. Oh, it's too funny. Okay, so tell me more about why cops are stupid.
So the standard range of scores applied for the police officers is a score between 20 and 27. The average score nationally for police officers is 21 to 22, the equivalent of an IQ of 104, just a little above average. A perfect score on the Wunderlich test is a 50. Basically, boiling this article down to the essence is that more and more police stations are either not requiring this test to be administered, or they are lowering the expectations. And, you know, that may seem absurd to some people, but it's really not when you think about it. Because I know you and Bill Buper have talked about this for a couple of episodes, how without a police force, the most horrific tyrant couldn't maintain his control.
Mm-hmm.
So they want...
They would be laughed at. I mean, could you imagine Hitler or Napoleon standing in Times Square demanding people... step into train cars and wear armbands. They would be laughed at. They would be thrown in mental hospitals.
Right. So they want these cops that are of lower intelligence who will follow orders blindly. That's basically the whole point of the article. And it's becoming a growing trend. The trend we saw a few years ago was to recruit vets returning from war zones because they viewed the public as enemies, like, well, they did in the countries they were in.
That's, but now, like, how do you know that? I think it might have just been a jobs program where it's like, hey, we got a bunch of people who have no skills. Basically, they can only
Yeah, I think you're right. To a certain point, it was definitely a jobs program because they weren't providing, they weren't fulfilling a lot of the promises to vets.
Yeah, we were like, hey, we told these guys they would have jobs when they came back and that they were developing valuable skills. Turns out we only taught them how to kill people, and you can't really use that anywhere except, well, maybe police.
Right. So, you know, that was a trend for a while, but I think you're seeing more and more vets waking up, I guess, to what's really going on. And fewer are applying for police forces. You know, I mean, you're always going to have the individuals that are sociopathic in tendency and want to control.
And so, you'll have the people who have no other options. The people who are like, hey, I got to feed my family.
Right.
Those exist too.
Right. So those are your two. But there's definitely been a decline. So what they're doing is they're just lowering the requirements. And, you know, it's funny because I read this today, and you know what movie I watched? My kid and I sat down to watch a movie earlier today, and it was Police Academy.
Oh, what a classic.
Yeah, and the whole premise, you know, it's in the opening scroll of the first scene, how they reduced the requirements and let anyone become a cop. It was a new pilot program. And, you
hasn't
know...
Hasn't that just, like, always been a joke, though? I mean, there's the Andy Griffiths and the Barney Fife... There's dumb cops who, and there's Chief Wiggum from The Simpsons. Like, dumb cops are a motif. They're a theme. They always have existed. It's not is getting any worse. They're just justifying their stupidity now.
Yeah. And, it saddens me because a lot of times when you have these police officers who are of lower intelligence and just understand that they have to make arrests, mm-hmm. they don't question the legitimacy of the laws they are supposedly enforcing. And a lot of times you'll find that they don't really have any compassion for their fellow man. I mean, I remember the last traffic violation I got. I didn't mouth off to the cop. I didn't do my whole libertarian spiel, which is usually what I do after I get the ticket.
I hope you're recording when you do that.
Oh, no, I'm not, and I should be, I know. But I just looked at the cop. You know, he had pulled me over for supposedly rolling a stop sign, which was absolute nonsense, and I didn't do it, but that's besides the point. And I just said, look, man, I'm trying to appeal to your humanity here. I said, you know, I'm a single dad. I'm struggling. You know, my hours got cut at work, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, it's 9 o'clock at night. I just want to go home. Can you cut me some slack? And the guy was like he was very unsympathetic, to put it mildly.
Oh, no. You asked him to cut you some slack and he got angry?
Yeah. Yeah. He
was like, oh, I'm not going to. Well, he muster he any humanity for you?
Spiel. Yeah, he went on this whole spiel about people being accountable, and I said, "Well, you know, I actually agree with you. I'm really big on personal accountability. I think we need more of that in this world." And yeah, he was not sympathetic, to say the least.
It's like, and I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
So here's your ticket. So, hey.
And I mean, that's what you find with this. Hiring policies of police, and
listen to this one. Sorry, I gotta cut you off because this story is ridiculous. I'm reading one of the quotes from the article here. One of the guys who took the test learned that he would not be interviewed because he, quote, didn't fit the profile. He was thinking it was age discrimination because he was 46, but then it later came out that the city responded that it removed Jordan from consideration because he scored 33 on the Wunderlich cognitive ability test. And to prevent frequent job turnover caused by hiring overqualified applicants, the city only interviewed candidates who scored between 20 and 27.
Yep.
Sorry, you're too smart for this job.
Yep. And that says it all right there.
I think that's really where they're coming from. That's amazing. How would you like to be the person who delivers that news? I mean, do you think they even get how that sounds? Like, hey, people of your caliber typically like to leave the job after a while, so we're not going to interview you. I mean, do they even realize how that sounds coming out of their mouths? Do they have
I'm
any?
Sure, they don't even care.
Do they
honestly
have any pride? I mean, I would be insulted to deliver that news. I'd be like, okay, I don't want to work for this outfit.
Yeah, but think about it. I mean, the person that's delivering that news is your typical bureaucrat, and they've probably been in that job for 15 years. So I gotta tell you, I don't think they really care.
And actually, maybe they like it, because it's kind of sweet to have a cushiony job when you're underqualified, and you're guaranteed a pension, and you get all sorts of accolades from the general public, because, ooh, you're one of those fancy bureaucrat people, or you're a fancy law enforcer with a tin badge. So there's lots of perks.
And they're framing it too as the police departments are framing it as, well, you know, smarter people realize that they can do better and make more money, so they leave the force. What they're leaving out is that people of higher cognitive abilities and critical thinking skills tend to see the ridiculousness and the corruption in the police forces and kind of have a conscience, and that's why they leave more often than not. It's not that they could go, I mean, I'm sure there are some cases where they could go in the private sector, you know, for private security and make more money.
What's it called? The defense distributed? Is that? No, that's a 3D printing. Threat Management Center is the place in Detroit where it's a bunch of private cops who, like, left out of conscious, I don't know what you call it.
But conscientious objections.
I guess so, yeah. Because they were hey, I can't do this drug war thing. I just want to keep people safe. And then they, like, bought tanks and guns and rolled around in it and got some customers, and now they keep people safe. And like, well, that's what smart cops would do.
It's not even just former police officers. It's average citizens.
Yeah. Well, that's what the smart cops should be doing. If you're too smart for your local police department and you still want to save people, why don't you look up some private alternatives like Threat Management Center or start one. Start your own.
Yes.
Let the market solve all of your problems.
Yes, fill that niche.
Don't we sound like cult leaders always suggesting the market is the solution? Let's come up with something new. How about violence? Maybe violence is the answer this time.
No, that's the government's job.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Meow, meow, meow therapy. Good to be with you, Chandler St. Pierre, here on the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
So, let's wrap this up. We've got a lot that we talked about here today about water allocation in California, how the government's screwing all that up. I mentioned football femme fatale, how there's a group of feminine dressing football players who are causing a stir in the NFL, and why the market is solving that problem. Lots of angry beer drinking men are telling them to stop dressing like ladies. And you know, problem solved. The market speaks.
Yeah. As it so many things, it just comes down to the market.
And technology, really, because it was Twitter which helped me share that story. It was actually first Facebook where I saw the link, and like thousands or tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people responding, interacting to this tweet. So much more interaction, thanks to technology.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know a lot of people bag on Facebook. The time suck thing I get. It can occupy a lot of your time. And the other argument is it's just, you know, NSA, CIA gathering information, which, who knows, may be true. I don't care, personally. I'm beyond that point now. But, you know, there's a lot of cool pages. There's a lot of cool sites. I've met a lot of cool people on Facebook, you know. And that's technology.
Yeah, and think about all the revolutions that have organized on social networks like Facebook.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't even have to be a revolution. You know, my friend and I, we used to do a November the 5th, you know, we'd have dinner and watch V.
Whatever is the 5th of November.
Yeah, and, you know, she started a dinner in V for Vendetta event on Facebook.
Oh, that's cute.
Let me and a couple of my friends know, you know.
So, is there a special V for Vendetta dish, like those eggs he made in the movie?
No, it's whatever we're in the mood for, which usually ends up being takeout. I think
bacon.
Last year we cooked something.
Yeah. Choose bacon. Bacon is for freedom.
Bacon is for freedom. Bacon's so good. I didn't get my daily dosage. That's probably why I'm feeling off today.
Get this guy an IV.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, technology allows the world to become a smaller place. It allows us to disseminate philosophy, ideas, media to the masses. You know, I've become a really big fan of Charles Bukowski, and just reading how he put his poetry out there, you know, having to type it all out and send it to the big publishing companies and all that. Nowadays, people just create their own websites and put the information out there. I mean, maybe they won't get the money that the big publishing houses offer, but whatever, you know, you get your art out there.
Can you imagine? I mean, we really do live in the greatest time that ever existed, that someone could have an idea, put it on a laptop, just type it up and send it out into space for any millions of people to read. It's just the most amazing thing to me. Think of all the artists who could survive, or the artists who may have come and gone, who never discovered because they had no outlet for their words. But now we do.
They do. It's such a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you're not taking advantage of that, don't wait. Go ahead today. There's never a perfect time to get started. I really believe that.
Just do it now
and, you know, keep working at it. No, it'll get perfected over time. Do you agree with that, Chandler?
I totally agree with it. You know, I've put out a little bit of my philosophy and art on the various social networks, and you know, I don't even do it so people see it and I'll become known and famous. It's just an outlet that, you know, it's cool. And I've had people comment on it and got input and feedback, and it helps the creative process. It's really great.
I agree. Well, I'm encouraged. Let's play a game. Read some call-outs from libertarians against humanity.
In his most recent video, Stefan Molyneux explains the truth about...
Alex Jones.
The Ethics of Liberty by Murray Rothbard says the law may not forbid...
George Soros.
And libertarians have to recognize their ideology will never be accepted by...
Am I being detained? All right, give us a quote.
Worms. The optimist sees the rose and not its thorns. The pessimist stares at the thorns, oblivious to the rose. That's Khalil Gibran. So, be an optimist. See the rose.
I see the rose. Can you?
Worms.
Worms. I hope we calm the hamster in your brain tonight. Michael Dean will be back with you tomorrow. Until next time, live long and be free.